This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Corruption has made several officials extremely wealthy at the expense of millions of their starving citizens. It affects every sector of the economy and every state institution.
That's the chair of the UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan on the latest report on corruption in the country. Details coming up also. Hundreds of protesters condemn the assassination attempt on Sudan's prime minister. And Uganda is giving an ultimatum to 22 foreigners since it feels they come from countries that are at high risk for the coronavirus outbreak. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok says he is safe following an assassination attempt today in Khartoum. Eyewitnesses say car bombs went off near the prime minister convoy as he traveled to his office. Afterward, hundreds of protesters gathered at the scene of the blasts, condemning what they call a terrorist attack. Naba Mohadin reports from Khartoum.
The attack happened at about 9 a.m. Monday morning local time near the federal prison in northern Khartoum, where the Sudanese prime minister's house is located. According to witnesses, Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok's convoy had just left his house. One witness, Moose Abzain, says the bombs targeted the Prime Minister's car. Zain says it's so obvious that it targeted Hamdok personally during a difficult time Sudan is experiencing. He says this is the first time an attack like this has happened since the December revolution. Another witness confirmed that the bombing targeted Hamdok's car. Muhammad Ali says when Hamdok's convoy was heading to the presidential palace, the explosion happened under the tunnel in the northern side. The explosion targeted his car, but luckily he was safe. Hundreds of Sudanese gathered at the scene of the blast to condemn the attack and demand that the government identify and punish the attackers. Military troops blocked the streets and the main bridges around the area and examined the exploded cars. Meanwhile, Hamdok declared on Twitter that he is in a good shape and said the attack will not stand in the way of Sudan's transition. Hamdok became prime minister last August after the military ousted President Omar al-Bashir following months of mounting protest against his 30-year rule. Some elements of the security forces are believed to still support Bashir, who the transitional government says may be transferred to the International Criminal Court to face war crimes charges. Naba Muhiddin for VOA News, Khartoum.
United Nations investigators accuse South Sudanese leaders of widespread corruption and trampling on the rights and fundamental freedoms of their people. The UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan presented its latest report to the UN Human Rights Council today. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The UN Commission accuses South Sudan's leaders of deliberately starving their people while brazenly looting and plundering the country's wealth. Commission Chair Yasmin Suka says these economic crimes have dire humanitarian consequences, especially for women and children.
Corruption has made several officials extremely wealthy at the expense of millions of their starving citizens. It affects every sector of the economy and every state institution. These are some of the same officials who fought for independence to improve the lot of their people and who have rapidly turned the dream of liberation into a nightmare.
Suka says some South Sudanese leaders have stolen tens of millions of dollars from the government treasury that should have been used to feed their people. She says the plunder of resources has turned this potentially oil-rich young country into the third worst place in the world in which to live. The report documents the recruitment of children by both the government and opposition forces. The UN Children's Fund reports some 19,000 children were still being used by the warring parties. Suka says the commission has documented a wide range of sexual and gender-based crimes against women and girls perpetrated with impunity by both government and opposition forces.
Sexual and gender-based violence continue to be systematically used by the armed parties in the conflict to terrorize and subjugate civilian populations. In particular, South Sudanese women and girls continue to face rape, gang rape, sexual mutilation, forced marriage, abduction, and sexualized torture.
South Sudan's ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Marwan Makol Arik, did not acknowledge any of the commission's blistering accusations of widespread government corruption. He glossed over the panel's findings into issues such as sexual abuse, the use of starvation as a tactic of war, recruitment of child soldiers, and the erosion of civic freedoms. Instead, he put a positive spin on the actions taken by his government. He noted that dozens of media agencies were operating freely and without censorship in the country. He said his government had signed two action plans with UN support to improve human rights. One, he noted, strengthens the ability of the judiciary to try cases of gender crimes and child abuse. The other, he said, is a plan to release child soldiers and reunite them with their families. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Uganda's Ministry of Health gave a choice to 22 foreigners arriving from countries that are considered to be at high risk for the coronavirus outbreak: go into quarantine or go home. The individuals had arrived to attend the Uganda European Business Forum. VOA's Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
Those turned to their home countries were given two options: to be quarantined in line with World Health Organization, WHO requirements, or return to their home countries. They chose to return home. Dr. Jane Ruth Acheng is Uganda's health minister.
None of them exhibited signs and symptoms of the coronavirus. But from the fact that they are from the Category 1 countries, we cannot take a risk. And so they were explained too that they will be quarantined for 14 days, so they can choose to come into the country and undergo the quarantine, and then later they are free, or they can choose to go back to their homes. We had a discussion with the ambassadors of these people, and they requested that we allow them to go home. So we quarantined them for one day in one location, and we were able to exit the country using the same flights that brought them in.
Uganda has placed travel restrictions on visitors from seven high-risk countries, including Italy, Iran, South Korea, France, China, Germany, and Spain. The Minister of Health says travelers from the UK, Switzerland, Norway, Netherlands, Sweden, Belgium, India, and the USA will be closely monitored and could become subject to travel restrictions if their outbreaks worsen. Yona Stegen Woldemariam is WHO Uganda country representative. He has urged Uganda to tighten screening at all entry points. He said WHO is spending a lot of money to counter a rise in misinformation on COVID-19 as it is hindering prevention of the virus.
That on itself is damaging the health on one hand. This information, some of them are really wrong and could lead into people dying. Like telling people if they take this drug or that drug, they will get better. So that means they are not going to go to the health facilities and get the supportive treatments they might need if they are in severe cases.
Am El Bor is the chief health system strengthening at the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, Uganda. She says coronavirus has no cure, but can be prevented if people follow recommended guidelines.
Don't believe these, I've got a treatment, I've got a cure, pay me money. That does not exist. Follow the guidelines of the Ministry of Health. You keep your hands clean. Wash them a lot with soap and water or with alcohol-based hand rub. Not because the virus can get through your skin, but because you will have touched somewhere where some sick person touched. Then you rub it into your eyes or nose, and that is how you get sick. So if you can break the habit, you can prevent yourself from getting this illness.
Uganda has no confirmed case of coronavirus so far. Eight African countries do, including Egypt, Algeria, Nigeria, Tunisia, Senegal, South Africa, Cameroon and Togo. According to the Ministry of Health, 1,296 travelers, including Chinese and Ugandans traveling back home, have been identified as high risk for purposes of follow-up. 765 travelers are under self-quarantine, and 456 of them have completed the mandatory 14 days of self-isolation. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
In other African developments on the coronavirus, Egypt reported its first fatality, a 60-year-old German tourist who tested positive Saturday. He was among the 55 confirmed cases in Egypt. Nigeria reported its second confirmed coronavirus case, a man who had come into contact with the first, the Italian man, who flew into Lagos from Milan on February 24th. Rwanda's capital, Kigali, has banned large gatherings. The country has not reported any cases of coronavirus so far. The policy does not extend to venues hosting smaller numbers of people. Church authorities announced that communal holy water to dip their fingers in and that communion would no longer be passed from hand to mouth. Meanwhile, world financial and commodity markets fell sharply today on growing concerns that the spread of the COVID-19 will cut global economic growth. Oil prices led the way with a decline of about 20%. Platinum prices fell about 4%, while copper was down about 3%. Cotton and cocoa also recorded declines, while South Africa's oil share index sank 6%. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 1580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok says he is safe following an assassination attempt today in Khartoum. United Nations investigators accuse South Sudanese leaders of trampling on the rights and fundamental freedoms of their people. And Uganda is giving 22 foreigners an ultimatum since it feels they came from countries that are at high risk for the coronavirus outbreak. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Malawi police have arrested two activists with the Human Rights Defenders Coalition for their role in a planned sit-in to shut down state residences. The demonstration aimed to pressure President Peter Mutharika to sign election reforms bills passed by Parliament. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi police say the Human Rights Defenders Coalition activists were arrested Sunday because of statements they made at a press conference on March 6 in the capital, Lilongwe. The HRDC called on Malawians to seal off all state residences with a sit-in on March 25 to pressure President Peter Mutharika to sign an election bill passed by Parliament. Police arrested HRDC Vice Chairperson Gift Trapens and member McDonald Sembeleka. National Police spokesperson James Kadadzera on Monday said the plan amounted to incitement for an authorized assembly.
Basically, the charge is coming under Section 124 of the Penal Code. That's inciting people to steal the state residences. In fact, we have in our custody two individuals who take them to court anytime soon.
Kadadzela said police were also looking for a third person, HRDC chairperson Timothy Ntambo. The arrests were made just hours after Mutharika denounced the planned protests at a Blantyre political rally and ordered security to stop the group.
Nobody in this country is above the law. Ntambo cannot be bigger than the government. Katrapins, Sembeleka, Maya, you are not bigger than the government. Get my word. Your time is up. The fight is over. Get up and smell the coffee.
The group's spokesman, Luke Tembo, says they will not be intimidated by the arrest.
HRDC is a system. HRDC is not about individuals. We're going to proceed with the plans. They're not going to intimidate us. What we're going to do now is making sure that our colleagues are released on bail, and then we proceed with our planned engagements.
Malawi's parliament in February passed the electoral reforms bill, which paves the way for fresh elections after the Constitutional Court nullified the May pause. The court cited massive irregularities in the vote, which saw Mutharika re-elected. The electoral bills propose a date for fresh elections and procedures to follow in case of runoffs. Malawi's constitution gives the president 21 days to sign the bills into law. But some activists, like the HRDC and opposition parties, worry Mutharika will drag out the process. Political science lecturer at the University of Malawi, Mustafa Hussein, says Sunday's arrests were heavy-handed and a bad sign.
You can see now, it's coming after a president says something. It's like the police were incited as well to do some sort of arrest, which I think he does not paint a good picture of the government. It's like a sign of political intolerance or wanting to victimize the human rights activists.
Hussein says since the shutdown was yet to happen, the police should have first discussed the planned protests with the activists. Since last year's May election results, the HRDC has been organizing protests which have sometimes turned violent. Opposition Malawi Congress Party President Lazarus Chakwera, in a statement Monday, gave the government 48 hours to release the rights activists. He said if they remained in custody by Wednesday, he would hold his own march to State House. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
Relatives of victims in last year's Ethiopian Airlines crash have arrived in Addis Ababa to commemorate the anniversary of the tragedy and to get answers. An airline industry's final report on what caused the Boeing 737 MAX to crash is expected this week. Simon Marks reports from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa.
Families of the 157 victims on board Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302 are holding memorials in Addis Ababa Monday, before travelling Tuesday to the crash site, about 45 kilometres outside the capital, for a private ceremony. At a small gathering at the French embassy Monday, relatives of the 9 French citizens killed in the March 10 crash commemorated their lost loved ones. There were no survivors when the nearly new Boeing 737 MAX crashed, just minutes after takeoff. Virginie Fricaudet is president of the victims' association, ET302 Solidarity Justice. She lost her 38-year-old brother Xavier, a teacher at the French school in Nairobi.
I would say that we have created like a community between all families, the French families on one side and the other global families on the other side. So I would say that it's a big and huge moment of being all together because we are linked by the same tragedy and destiny. So it's a moment we should live like a big family.
Surviving relatives have asked for Boeing not to be involved in the anniversary memorials and have filed lawsuits against the company to seek compensation. Their visit to Ethiopia comes as air safety investigators are expected to release an interim report on the roles played by Boeing, the US Federal Aviation Administration, and Ethiopian Airlines. Relatives and friends of the victims are still waiting for answers and remain critical of how the aftermath of the crash was handled, including by Ethiopian Airlines. Yeshawas Zageya was president of the Airline Pilots Association of Ethiopia at the time of the crash.
What's quite interesting up to this point is the company did not have a consultation with pilots and cabin crews at all after the crash. That isn't something that I would have expected. So I would expect the company would engage more with its pilots, especially those who flew on the same airplane, Boeing 737 MAX at the time.
Zageya also criticized Ethiopian Airlines for not acting after the Lion Air crash in Indonesia, also a 737 MAX, that took place months earlier. Relatives of the Ethiopian Airlines crash victims agree the 737 MAX should have been grounded soon after the Lion Air crash. Aviation engineer and vice president of ET302 Solidarity Justice, Mathieu Wilm, says Boeing needs to explain why the 737 MAX aircraft were allowed to continue flying.
After the first crash, my opinion is that Boeing should have said, hey, we have a problem with the design. We should ground the fleet and investigate. But they didn't. Actually, the second crash is very different from the first one because after the first one, they discovered some design problem, some certification problem and so on. So it's a chain of events leading to an accident. But for the second one, the pilots applied the procedure and the aircraft crashed anyway. So there is a problem and they should have grounded the fleet at that time.
A US congressional report last week into the crash accused Boeing of concealing crucial information from the FAA, making faulty assumptions about critical technologies and production pressures that jeopardized aviation safety. Boeing did not immediately reply to a request for comment. But in public statements, the company has said it will review the report, continue to cooperate with investigators, and that its thoughts and prayers are with the relatives who lost loved ones. Boeing last year set aside $100 million to assist the families of victims and communities impacted by the crashes, which killed 346 people in total. The funds are not part of any compensation the aircraft maker might have to pay to those who are suing the company for damages. Boeing has said it is strengthening safety measures and estimates it will be able to recertify the Boeing 737 MAX aircraft for use around the middle of this year. Simon Marks for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.